if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast 214. We are covering the RBC Canadian Open on the PGA Tour and the Volvo Scandinavian Mixed on the DP World Tour. Paul Williams joins me, Steve Bamford, to discuss this week's golf betting action. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Steve. How are you doing?
We're good. We've got no Barry this week. He's in on holiday in the west of Ireland, a golfing holiday. So he might return for our US Open research podcast later this week. So we'll see where we get with that. Right, please subscribe to this podcast as you drive the popularity of the show. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit begambleaware.org for more info. And of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world famous golf betting system website with our in-depth betting previews, tournament form statistics, form charts, including combined course plus current form, plus our predictive models. All of these features, like this podcast, are completely free of charge with no paywall. We're on Twitter, Paul's at Golf Betting. I'm at Bamford Golf. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. Plus, look out for the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. Please subscribe and like the shows. You can listen, of course, to this podcast on the YouTube channel if that tickles your fancy. Now, you guys as listeners power this podcast, so we need your five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name and where you are in the review. Right, this one is entitled Good Fun with a Financial Return, 5 stars. I eagerly await this podcast each Tuesday. It has significantly improved my financial returns from the bookies on a regular basis. Complaints. Who does this Steve guy think he is taking holidays and as a result, no podcast allowing Paddy Power to take money from me? The next week, he had the audacity to go to a funeral and delay my fun. Seriously, though, lads, thanks for all of your work. It is greatly appreciated. Steve's mangling of names just adds to the fun. And that is from Pipolero. So there you go. He's talking about mangling of names. And he's called Pipolero. And he's in Ireland.
He's kind of sticking the knife in a bit. Sticking the knife a bit in there, Steve, isn't he? With your we do have to try and work these things around things that happen in normal life as well, don't we? Sadly.
Yeah. You have to have a holiday now and again, don't you?
Yeah.
There won't be any holidays for me for a while, so don't worry about that. Let's talk about last week, shall we?
Mm-hmm.
You got an each way place. I got an each way place.
Yeah, just about. Marcel Schneider snuck into a tie for fifth. I guess in the end, I should be pleased that he got there because it was the second best round of the day, I think, on Sunday. Yeah. But he was in a much stronger position. I mean, with 7 holes to go, a real lightning finish, and he could have been threatening for the lead and potentially the win. And parred the last 7 holes coming home on what was an extremely penal and tricky track, I've got to say. It's, the number of doubles and trebles and water balls. I mean, unbelievable.
It was a cracking US Open warm-up for Tommy Fleetwood. I know that.
I dread to think, Steve, how many balls you and I would need to take if we went and played that course. Because seriously, if the pros are going in 2 or 3 times a round, which was seemingly what was happening, certainly to my players, then it would be a painfully expensive experience for you and I. I think.
Was it that difficult when they played there before?
Not particularly. It's a challenging track. It's very long. The par fives. Then they're 3-shotters in the main, and the ones that you think you can have a go at, so many players were ending up in the water. It was unreal. And it just ended up as a war of attrition, except for Kelly Samuya, who came through with an incredible final round of 8 under, broke the course record and walked away with a title in the end. That's the way to do it. But yeah, at one point, Marcel Schneider, who was 5 under through 11, I think he was, threatened to do exactly that. He threatened to get himself in a position, particularly with 3 par 5s still to play on the card at that point. But those par 5s are not gimmies by any stretch of the imagination. So yeah, should be content with the fact that he managed to get some kind of return in the end, because it looked like it was all lost to that point. And yeah, you got a bit of Zalatoris back as well, didn't you, over in the States?
Oh, yeah, it was one of those weird ones. I had players in the mix, and it just kind of... Keegan Bradley was there or thereabouts. Cam Young, playing the golf that he's been playing, was right in the hunt.
Mm.
Zalatoris, I think he went out like 6th, 7th last group on Sunday. And Cam Young shoots 11 over or something. He's like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Very strange. Very strange.
Odd round, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Next week he'll probably be next time he's on and I'm not on board, he'll probably shoot 11 under to win yeah, on that particular Sunday. But who had Billy Horschel? I mean, Billy Horschel. Jesus, where did that come from?
Yeah. Just found his game, didn't he? When he's good, he literally found it
when he got. He clearly arrived in Ohio, because up until that point, across all of my kind of checks and measures and everything I do, there was not one single green light for Billy Horschel.
No,
driving, approach play, putting, nothing at all.
No. It was the pairs event. When he come tied second, I think, something like that, didn't he? But in terms of solo,
no, nothing.
Stroke play, there was nothing there. I forget where I backed him maybe a month or 6 weeks or so ago, because he had shown some stuff earlier in the season, but yeah, in more recent weeks, just didn't appear to be on his game, but pulled it all round. Very impressive.
Did you see masses of Billy Horschel winning tickets? Because I didn't.
No, the odd one or two, but not many.
I'm just tapping in to see what he'd actually done at Muirfield before winning. I don't think it was a great deal. No, he'd had a 9th and a 7th back in 19.
Yeah, there were a couple of top 10s.
Charity Open, yeah.
Yeah, there were a couple of top 10s. But yeah, if you were looking to see how his state of current game was, you would have you'd put a line through him, as most punters did by the looks of it.
It was also one of those tournaments where he had it won on Saturday night. I mean, he's 5 clear, wasn't he? He was on the winning score Saturday. On a golf course where you weren't really going to shoot 64s, it was too firm. The rough was too lush. It was a Jack Nicklaus setup, quite right. But yeah, he played so exceptionally on that Saturday. He just detached himself. And when you're being chased down by Aaron Wise, it's kind of okay. I think I'll take Billy's going. I think I'll take this one. Yeah, I'll take this.
Yeah, we kept him at arm's length on Sunday. Every time that Wise got within striking distance, I guess, and Horschel just pulled away a little bit and reasonably comfortable in the end.
So well Aaron done. Wise, the statistics, statistic world number one, Aaron Wise, every week. He hit 8 of 18 greens on Sunday.
Yeah.
That's the kind of performance you get from Aaron. But fair play to him, 2nd place.
Mm.
He does tend to pop up on longer classical golf courses, Wise. I can remember him, he finished 2nd at Quail Hollow in his breakout season, and then won the next outing at the Byron Nelson.
Yep, that's right.
His only win to date, Aaron Wise.
Mm.
But he's always got great stats.
Yeah, there's something about him, but not quite good enough to chase down Billy Ho last week.
But yes, grabbed a piece of each way return and we move on. That's all. At least you're minimising the damage. If you can't have... That's the trouble with me, Paul. If I know I haven't really got a chance of winning, I struggle to get excited to even sit down and watch it. That's kind of the way. If the juices are there and I've got players in the mix, I'll sit and watch it and get right into it. But when you're kind of starting and Cam Young, within the first 3 holes, shoots 4 over, I'm thinking to myself, do I really want to put the golf on or should I go and stroke the cat?
It does sap the enthusiasm a little bit when you get started.
It does a little bit, yes.
But yeah, no. Well, Sunday will go your way or my way again soon, hopefully.
Of course. This is golf betting, right? Where do you want to start? Should we start with yours this week for a bit of a mix up? Because you've got a very unique event this week. I mean, it's a unique week, isn't it? Anyway, with this live event that's going on just around the corner from us in St Albans, and nobody's talking about the golf. They're all talking about the destruction. So the self-destruction of professional golf is like, it's a strange time.
Yeah, I mean, if nothing else, there's a lot of noise around it, isn't there? I was looking at the market just out of curiosity last night, and from a betting perspective, it's really not remotely interesting.
Oh, I haven't even looked at it.
Yeah, only a handful of bookies have decided to price it up at the moment. You've got a short 48-man field. DJ, what, the 4-1 or thereabouts favourite? And you've got the likes of Talor Gooch at 8 or 9-1. I don't know. It's really not getting my juices flowing. But we'll see how
you could have 8-1 on Louis Bad Back Goose Days, isn't
it? Yeah. 9-1 on Kevin Nahr. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of noise, and in that respect, the whole marketing piece behind it has probably done a fair job, and they were giving away tickets with promotional codes over the weekend, which got people scrambling around and sharing on social media. And again, from a marketing perspective, that's done its job, I think, and created a bit of noise around it. But there's going to be people who agree and disagree, and politically, I'm not going to get into it. You and I have swerved it, so we can concentrate on the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour, and watch from a distance and see where it progresses to, I guess.
Well, it's difficult to tip on it because you don't really know what you're getting yourself into. It's a completely different concept. They're talking about teams. It's all very strange. I think you just got to let it kind of... I've got a feeling, though, you know, I do have a feeling that more and more of these players are just going to jump.
Well,
they're going to go down the Kevin Nahr route and just resign. That takes the PGA Tour out of the equation in terms of ramifications. And they'll just jump for the money because the money is just ridiculous.
Yeah, it's just obscene. Yeah, and some will be blinded by those numbers, and I guess it depends on their life stage and where their career aspirations are. I'll watch it from afar with a relative amount of intrigue rather than interest, I guess. Mm. But yeah, not a betting event for me at the moment.
No, certainly not. So on to the Scandinavian Volvo Mixed. It's an interesting tournament. So over to you.
Yeah, I didn't cover it last year. I forget if I was away on holiday or just looked at it and decided not to. One or the other. But yeah, it was popular last year. Henrik Stenson, Annika Sorenstam are the hosts, and they've returned this year, building on the success from last year's inaugural event, because, as you just said, they've got a title sponsor now, Volvo. Mm. Big brand, of course. And they've doubled the prize fund as well, up to $2 million. So doing something right. And as the name suggests, the Scandinavian Mixed, it's a different format. It's a mixed men's and women's event. We've got 78 players from the DP World Tour. We've got 78 players from the Ladies European Tour, the LET, making a full field of 156. And all the players, they're all playing on the same course. They're playing at the same time. They're playing for the same prize fund, to the same pins. All they're doing is just hitting from different tees. So we've got a slightly different yardage for the men and the women. Other than that, it's a level playing field. And that's kind of reflected, really, with the odds. I mean, we've seen a few of these different style men's and women's events. Somewhere there's two titles, somewhere it's mixed. And generally, if you look at the pricing, then generally the men tend to be much shorter. But we've got a bit of a mix this week. Alex Noren's the 10-1 favourite. Eduardo Molinari, 22-1. Alexander Bjork, 22-1. And then we've got some of the women. We've got Maya Stark, 25-1. Lynn Grant, 28-1. And then back to Romain Langasque, 28-1. Henrik Stenson, the host, or one of the hosts, 30-1. And then you're out to the likes of Jason Scrivener, Johannes Veerman, John Catlin, Julian Brune, 35-1, 40-1 bar. So from the bookies perspective, they've put a few of these the top rated or top fancied women right in the kind of second tier of players in terms of the odds after Alex Noren, who's the clear favourite and justifiably the clear favourite. Intrigue, I think, is the word this week. Boyle Sports, 8 places each way in this event. So again, as we've been saying, do check out their prices. There are some decent prices from this week as well. So do take a look if you are placing a bet on this event. Just to complicate things a little bit further, as I said, we did have an event last year. They've moved the course from Gothenburg last year down to Halmstad Golf Club, which sits about 100 kilometres or so further south down the coast. Slightly different course, slightly shorter, 6,909 yard par 72 for the men, so sub 7,000, 6,681 par 72 for the women. So from both perspectives, it's not a long course. Parkland Affair, despite it's only just a couple of hundred metres in from the coast, but it is Parkland. Classical in style, plenty of dog legs. The holes are tree-lined. They're not encroachingly so. I think you're thinking more kind of Italian Open than Valderrama in terms of the way it will look and feel. The green's relatively flat, the bent grass-based. And if you're looking for course history, you're going to struggle, really. It hosted the 2007 Solheim Cup. Prior to that, you've got to go all the way back to 2002 on the Challenge Tour and the year 2000 on the LET if you want to find any form at all. 20-odd years ago really isn't going to help you out a great deal this week, I don't think. In terms of the weather, it could be a little bit of rain working through on Thursday. The latest forecast, it looked a bit wetter yesterday when I wrote my preview. It doesn't look quite so bad today, this morning on Tuesday here in the UK. But we still could get a little bit of rain working through on Thursday. Other than that, it's going to be generally dry, generally light winds, 5 to 10 miles an hour. Temperatures in the mid-60s Fahrenheit there or thereabouts. So it should be reasonably scorable. Shouldn't present the kind of challenges that we've seen over the last week or two on the DP World Tour. Other than that, I mean, we've got a change of venue, so there's not a great deal else we can go on. There are stats available for last year on a different course entirely, of course. So you could look at that, but you know, again, it's a different track. If you look at these mixed style events that we've seen now and again on the DP World Tour, in general, the men have outscored the women. So when you're looking at the market here and looking at how you might play your selections, I suspect it's reasonably prudent to you know, kind of weight the men slightly more than the women in terms of your picks. But that wasn't necessarily going to be the case last year. If you look at the 54-hole lead, there were two men and two women tied for the lead heading into the final day. As it panned out, there was only one woman in the top nine in the end, and that was Alice Hewson. She finished third. Jonathan Caldwell won at 150-1 last year. He beat Adrian Ategui, who's one of these players who absolutely loves these alternate style events. He's got a really good record on these. And then, just go all the way down to 10th place before you found another LET player on the leaderboard. So, you know, whilst I don't think there's any reason, theoretically, why the setup this week should overly favour the men, it's relatively short for both men and women, I think you may well find a reasonably similar scenario this year. And kind of to that end, I've gone with four. Three of them men, one of the LET players to kind of satisfy my curiosity, I suppose. I don't know. Perhaps we'll see a more even event this year, but I don't know. The odds would suggest that may be the case with a couple of the women in the top three or four in the betting, but we shall see. Anyway, I'm back four, as I say, three men. First up, Johannes Veerman. 40-1 I got yesterday. That went, there's lots of 35-1 or thereabouts still available. So that's a decent price and a decent player, I think. And if you look at the top of the market, you've got Alex Noren up there. He's the obvious favourite, I think. 60th in the world rankings at the moment. If you look back historically, and we've discussed this a few times on the pod in the past, immediately prior to a major championship, Norrin's got a really good record. In fact, four of his career wins have come in his starts immediately preceding a major championship. So the fact that he's already got a place in the US Open next week, he's come over here to Sweden to play, you know, potentially 10 to 1, he could be a shoo-in. Yet, I don't know, the last couple of events, two missed cuts, not exactly sparkling form, potentially a distraction next week. I don't know. It's you know, has he changed his approach? If you look at these wins immediately prior to a major championship, that was all up until 2018. After that, he's kind of changed his winning style, at least. Perhaps he's
He doesn't win anymore. Yeah, well, yeah. That's the change of winning style.
Yeah, and he's been playing more over in the US, and I get that, and it's tougher. I understand that. But perhaps in terms of his preparation for major championships, I mean, he's the kind of player that when the course suits, he should be at least semi-challenging for major championships. He's got some ability. So perhaps his approach to these events has changed, and you know, instead of going out and going gung-ho the week before, the start before, he's more about preparation and fine-tuning, which, if that's the case, then 10 to 1 about Alex Norrin really doesn't appeal a great deal. I'm trying to justify not backing him, and I haven't backed him. No such distractions, though, for Johannes Veerman. He's had a relatively poor season, so didn't get one of the top 10 spots for the US Open qualifying race that happened recently on the DP World Tour. Isn't anywhere near the top 50 or 60 in the world to get himself an automatic spot, so he's going to have to content himself from watching it on the TV, I guess. But yeah, he's a good player. He's a player that I think should be pushing on from where he is. He's just turned 30 last couple of weeks. Perhaps there's a new focus that will come through into his game and his play. Certainly saw an improvement last week. He'd missed five of his previous six cuts, then finished 10th last week. 8th for greens in regulation. That was his best approach play in that respect since January. 7th for strokes gained putting. Seemed really happy on social media, on Instagram, with the progress that he'd made last week. And if you look at his form on some of these tree-lined parkland affairs that he's played over in the recent past, Italy and Valderrama, he's had some decent finishes, then yeah, it adds up. There's quite a lot to like about how or when Johannes Veerman plays his best golf. So, yeah, I thought he was worth taking the favourite on with this week. So Veerman's in. I've also backed Thriston Lawrence. Backed him 40 to 1 with Boyle Sports 8 places this week. You can get slightly longer 45s out there, but given the price differential, I was happy to take the 8. We've had some good form from him this term so far on similar tracks, you know, ones with similarities to this week, either in the way they're set up or the agronomy or potentially both. Second in Kenya, top 10s at Peakenwood and Stain City on those Parkland style tracks. So, yeah, I think he should like it. He should enjoy this particular test this week. Last week, he opened with a 78 in Germany. You know, at that point, you're staring at a missed cut. But the 54 holes after that, only eventual winner Kali Samuya and Brandon Stone, who finished in fifth place eventually, only those two beat his final 54-hole total. So he really did pull it together over the final three rounds. The putter improved last week, 6th for putts per greens in regulation. And his strokes gained approach play over the last few weeks has been really good and progressive. 19th, 13th, 15th, and then 11th last week in terms of strokes gained approach from four of his last five starts. So that all seems to be coming together. If he's putting well, then I think he could go close again here this week, I think. So that's Lawrence. The LET player I've backed is Leanne Pace. She's 41 now. But it's not so long ago then she was pretty prolific on the Ladies European Tour. She won 5 times in a year in 2010 on that tour. Quite rightly Player of the Year that year. Won on the LPGA in 2014, so she won stateside as well. And if you look at her record since, she's won a title, or at least one title, every year since 2014, including, quite recently in April, a successful defence of her South African Women's Open title that she'd won the year before. Since that point, she's finished 20th, 10th, 14th and 6th last week in Italy. Long game looks really good. Really good stats coming out of her effort last week in Italy. 25th in this event last year. Now, that was after she travelled straight back from the US Open, or the Women's US Open last year. So there was some travel and some, a come down from a major championship last year. No such issues this year. She was playing in Italy and on the regular tour last week. Sixth place finish, as I say, coming over here as an 80-1 shot. I think she could be one of the women who features on the leaderboard this week. And finally, I've taken a punt on Scott Hend, 150-1. Again, where do you try and pitch when and where to back Scott Hend? He's one of those enigmatic players who you can sometimes struggle to actually pin down as the style and type of course that he should appear and should play well on. He misses an awful lot of cuts, so if he misses a cut this week, it's no massive surprise. But he can win. He's one of these players who can actually win a golf tournament. There's plenty of players who make cuts each and every week and never win. Scott Hend is the kind of player that I'm quite happy to take a chance on. If he misses the cut, so be it. If he wins 150-1, then happy days. As long hitter, but you don't necessarily see him appearing or thriving on the longer courses. He seems to come alive on the shorter classical style tracks. One in Hong Kong at Fan Ling back in 2014. That's a short, fiddly, classical style track. One in Saujana at the Maybank Championship in 2019. Slightly longer, that one, just over 7,100 yards. But for a par 72, that's not long whatsoever. And that's another kind of classical Parkland style course as well. Come close twice in the Swiss Alps at Crans Saussure. Lost two playoffs there over the years. And again, you know, you think Scott Hend, would you really associate him with these style of courses? But he continually pops up. So seeing him pop up this week wouldn't be a massive surprise to me, really. And you always get a price on him. Anyway, not because he can't win, because I described he can win. He's won an awful lot on the Asian tour as well, but simply because he's so inconsistent. But we've seen a little bit recently. He missed 12 cuts on the trot earlier this year, then finished 14th in Holland. He was feeling ill that week. Third going into Sunday before the illness finally really caught up with him. But that was a real turning point. Played on the Asian tour last week. Finished mid-division, but his long game looked really good. Third for total driving in old money on the Asian tour last week. So there's something about his long game at the moment that's potentially going to match him up quite nicely to this week. And finished fourth in this last year. Fourth here last year. Also finished fourth at the Nordea Masters back earlier in the mid-2010s. So he's got some some reasonable current form. He's got some event form and some local form too. 150-1, worth taking a punt on, in my view. So that's just to summarise, Scott Hend, 150s, Liam Pace, 80-1, Thurston Lawrence, 40s, and Johannes Veerman, 40-1 also. Now, I know it's a tricky event it was a tricky event for me to try and get my head around, so I'm not sure.
Don't even ask, Paul. I see Lagergren? Who's the Swede near the top of the leaderboard?
Yeah, Lagergren last week. I tend to prefer him on more exposed and coastal style tracks, linksy tracks.
I wonder if that Sebastian Soderberg comes and bites you on the bottom, because you've been tipping him up recently.
Yeah. He was penciled in last week to play and then didn't, and I've not seen a specific reason as to why he pulled out, so I've kind of veered away from him. But yeah, he'd been playing well. He got an each way place for us the week before, didn't he? So
he's been playing well. Who knows?
But yes,
I'm not getting overly excited about Alex Noren, who hasn't won for 4 years or 5 years at 9-1. I know that much.
No, and I just wonder whether he's, you know,
maybe he's getting a free Volvo.
Well,
for arriving, who knows?
Yeah, potentially half in holiday mode and half in preparation mode for next week's US Open.
Maybe they've given him one of these nice electric Polestars that he can take back to America with him.
Potentially.
Or maybe it's already in America on his drive. Do you want to know who qualified from the US Open qualifiers yesterday?
Go for it.
Right. These are notables because there's plenty of names here I've never heard of. Blixt, Taron, Satoshi Kodaira. So Barry will be happy. Taylor Montgomery out of the San Francisco qualifier. He's a very good player on the Corn Ferry. He's going to make waves, I think, when he gets promoted. Chase Sievert. Harry Hall, the young Englishman. Mm-hmm. He qualified. And Joseph Bramlett, Grayson Murray, Kevin Nahl's best mate, and Kevin Chappell. I often find it more interesting who didn't qualify. So let's take you through some notables who didn't qualify. Hao Tong Lee, he was playing in New York. He didn't qualify.
Yeah, and he'd come straight over from Germany as well. So
yeah, he didn't make it. He withdrew, so he just walked off the course, clearly... didn't get a good night's sleep or something. Mm. Love Mark Wagner Barnes. That was from New York. We had Pendrith withdrew with a rib injury. He's disappeared off the face of the earth, Pendrith. So clearly fighting injuries. He withdrew. Wesley Bryan, Harry Higgs, Billy Hurley. I didn't even know Billy Hurley was still playing golf, but yes. Notables from the one in Georgia. Patton Kazire didn't make it. Brendan Todd, who I'm sure a few will be backing this week, he didn't make it. Ted Potter Jr., your favourite. And then we had Keith Mitchell, Bill Haas, Richie Warinsky. They all walked off the course. They clearly weren't going to qualify in Georgia. Now, down in Jupiter, Florida, Ricky Fowler didn't make it. So he didn't make the qualification process. Matthew Wolf, he walked off the course as well. And from the one in San Francisco, Maverick McNeely didn't make it. Well, there's a name for you as well, Paul. Spencer Levine. He didn't make it. He's still, do you reckon he's still smoking cigs, old Spencer Levine?
he's still trying by the looks of it.
Norman Zhong, Tyler Strafacki, Daniel Summerhays, and his son Preston, who again is going to be another talented youngster. Yeah, Summer. Yeah. McNeely, he's a strange guy, and he's going off at like 33-1 every week in a in a weak field. He can't even get qualified for out of a US Open qualifier. And then we had Haggy, Ryan Armour, Martin Trainer, and JJ Spawn. They didn't qualify out of the one that was in Toronto.
Yep.
Where Blixt, Taron and Kodaira did.
So we should have a... with the top 60 that was confirmed yesterday, I believe, for the world rankings, we should have a pretty full field then when that washes through today.
Yeah.
So...
as you know, Paul, I had written Luke List's tip for the RBC Canadian Open. Gave it to you. Let's go live, Paul. And then I noticed there was a gap on Odds Checker where there weren't a couple of prices. I closed my eyes and thought, here we go. Went straight to Rob Bolton. Yeah, WD. Because he'd snuck back into the world's top 60.
Yep.
With that place, or that top 15, was it in the end at Muirfield?
Yep, just enough.
He'd managed just to get back over, yeah. So he's in the US Open field. It's an awful week. I hate this week, to be fair. Mm. All these people that... WD. So how that affects the field, I have no idea. But there might be, I expect, another raft of WDs on Tuesday. Players yes. saying, no, I think we'll get ourselves up to Boston rather than play in Toronto.
Yeah. Yeah. There'll be some movement. There were a few WDs overnight. I guess in terms of our preparation for the US Open, we're planning to do a preview pod later in the week. There'll also be the regular stats for major finishes and US Open history, which we can now publish, which will probably be on the website by Thursday, I'd say, that we've got a field.
Yeah, I don't know if the US Open, you know, like most of them, you win the week before you get in. I don't know if that works for the US Open. The USGA have got such prehistoric rules of engagement. Who knows?
Yeah, it didn't appear to be the case, but then there was still scope for last-minute invitations as well, by the looks of it. So there could be a curveball or two thrown in at some point as well. Perhaps a late reprieve for Ricky. We'll see.
I did think that as you were talking about the Scandinavian. It's like, how are they going to manufacture getting Ricky Fowler into the field this week?
Yeah.
There's only so many times you can do that, though, isn't there?
Well, apparently not.
Be fascinating to see how many. I take it all the LIV players will be welcomed back with open arms, yeah? We will see. Right. RBC Canadian Open, it's back. National Open Canada, sponsored by Royal Bank of Canada. You get a decent field. Headline this week, Scheffler, JT, Rory McIlroy, Cameron Smith, Sam Burns. You can't really complain about that as a top five.
No.
So good for Canada's Open. It's good to see it back. Always used to be the week after the Open Championship. But in this new schedule where we've got these compacted majors into a very tight space of time space, it now is the opener or the curtain raiser for the US Open. So we'll go into the course because it's one of these travelling opens with a course rotor. We'll go into where they're playing it and that in a second. Let's talk bookmakers. You mentioned Boyle Sports on yours. Of course, they are 10 places each way as ever on the PGA Tour this week. If you want to maximise your each way places, as I did on Keegan Bradley last week, and he still couldn't finish in the top 10. I think he shot 3 over or 4 over. He was 3 or 4 over after 4 holes as well, Keegan Bradley, on Sunday. So yeah. my interest in the tournament waned very quickly as all of my players were hurtling down the leaderboard, apart from Will Zalatoris. But if you... 10 places each way for... Boyle Sports. But as we keep saying, we are very much into highlighting 10bet at the moment. We've noted them for offering standout prices on popular players with market-leading odds, which you take at 5 places each way at a quarter the odds term. So the old standard industry terms on each way, 5 places a quarter odds. Now, as we record the podcast... On the RBC Canadian Open, they are offering, listen to these, right, market best, 18-1 on Sam Burns, 30-1 on Tony T2 Finau, 70-1 on Jonathan Vegas, 100-1 on Brendan Todd, who didn't make the US Open yesterday, 120, I did have a good close look at Brendan Todd, but you know, or I don't, maybe you don't know, he's on my post-it note of doom.
Yeah, you mentioned him before. I'm not sure exactly what he's done to find his way on there, but
Luke List's on there as well, by the way. But I relented, wrote his tip, and then he withdrew. I mean, that just tells you absolutely everything you need to know. 125-1 on Cameron Champ, and I thought this price was crazy. 140-1 on Aaron Rye. So here we go. Look, 18-1 on Sam Burns with 10bet right now. He's as short as 12-1 with Betfred. And listen to this on Cameron Champ. 125-1 on Cameron Champ. Another that I had a very close... We talk about Champ regularly on the podcast. He's one of those guys, when he's shown something,
yep,
can win on any kind of track. So this is well within his remit. 125-1 with 10bet. He's as short as 66-1 with Coral. Yeah. And that's what you get with 10bet. You get exceptional prices on players each week. New 10bet customers get a 50% welcome bonus up to £50 when signing up through Golf Betting System. You can find details about their new customer promotion, plus a link through to that very offer, plus T's and C's, in this podcast description. Yeah, 125-1 on Cam Champ, 66-1 right now with Coral.
Yeah. Always some standout prices with those guys, and yeah, always just worth a cursory look if you fancy a player. Just double check, because you might find there's just a completely outlandish price on there. There was one of the players I've backed yesterday was just obscene price with them. So I'll mention that later on.
They have a 50% welcome bonus on your first qualifying deposit. So if you deposit anything above £15 or €15 from the Republic of Ireland, that will have a 50% welcome bonus. The maximum you can have is up to £50. So to maximise, effectively, deposit £100, you'll get that maximum £50 or €50 welcome bonus. But it's on the first qualifying deposit. Right, let's talk RBC Canadian Open in terms of the course. They have moved it to, this year, St George's Golf and Country Club, which is in a rather swanky part of Toronto. A Stanley Thompson 29 design. It's had a couple of recent renovations, 2014 and 2019, with Doak and Andrew, so Tom Doak. I would describe it as a classical golf course. It's your typical tree-lined affair. But I wouldn't say it's that typical. It's one of those setups that you need to pay particular attention to, and it might uncover the kind of player that we're looking for this week. Mm. It's a par 70. It's 7,014 yards in length. It doesn't sound long, does it?
No.
Number of holes with water in play, 3. So I can see why Tony Tito Finau is playing this week. Not a lot of water in play. Fairways are bent grass with Poa Nua. The rough is Kentucky bluegrass with ryegrass. 3.5 inches in length. With the amount of rain that's falling out there, I would have thought the rough is sprouting and they're not going to be able to cut it. And this is the thing that really got me. The greens. 4,000 square feet on average. And they feature luminary creeping bent grass. So if you're hearing anything about Poa Nua on the greens, don't believe it. Luminary creeping bent grass. The greens were changed from a bent grass Poana mix in that 2014 renovation.
Yep.
So they're pure bent. No Poa.
And tiny as well. So that's comparable to a Pebble Beach kind of size. Well,
it's funny you should say that, Paul. Because I was digging while you were talking about the mixed action in Scandinavia. Pebble Beach, 3,500 square feet on average. They're the smallest on tour. And of course, Harbour Town, where they play the RBC Canadian Open, the RBC Heritage. Those greens there are 3,700 square feet.
Yep.
So by my reckoning, probably the third smallest greens on tour this year.
Mm.
They're tiny. We've been playing golf courses of late, Colonial, even last week at Memorial, 5,200 square feet. So they're small greens. Now, that was very noticeable as well when they played here in 2010, because this was the course they played at the 2010 RBC Canadian Open. That was won by Carl Peterson. Our friend Carl Peterson, big fat Carl. But then they had Poa in them. So take from that what you will. The greens in regulation numbers that week were quite... They were relatively low.
Yep. Yeah, which makes sense on a course with very small or relatively small greens.
The course, as you would expect, in the lavish Islington suburb of Toronto, is a parkland tree-lined affair and is classical in nature. Space is at a premium, so the course only measures 7,000 yards to its tips. It's also a hybrid specimen, a par 70, which features 5 par 3s, 3 par 5s. It's a 34-36 setup. Now, the par 3s are unique in themselves. They're quite stringent. Indeed, 4 of them, the 3rd, the 8th, the 13th and 16th, are between 200 and 215 yards long. So instantly, my kind of tingly senses are saying, well, it'd be nice to get people that are good with their proximity from above 200 yards.
Yep.
There are 10 par 4s. They're an intriguing set as well. 370-odd yard openers on both sides of the course will be taken apart. And there is also another sub-400-yard par 4 at the 12th. The other par 4s, though, all measure between 450 and 486 yards in length. That's crazy.
Mm. Yeah, real mix.
Par 5s, very, very gettable. 538, 528, 560. And I read a lot of comments from the golfers like Luke Donald and players of that ilk back in 2010, basically saying that, you know, the par fives are there to be taken apart.
Yeah.
But yes, some of these par threes and par fours are stern stuff. Carl Pettersson shot 10 under on his way to victory in 2010. So scoring around here is possible. There was also a number of 62s. So you can see this. I mean, if you can get a player that's good with eagling par fives, that's a big tick for me. But for me, all of that suggests that we need players that are very good from plus 200 yards. Anything 225, 250, I think, is probably a positive as well. And players that can play long 450-yard and longer par fours. I think if you can get players with that kind of skill set, you're not going to be far away this week.
Yeah, accurate long irons into small greens.
Yeah.
And it's get streaky all, with...
It's also hammering down with rain.
Well, this is it. It's, if you're seeing players, you know, Pettersson getting, well, shooting a 60, so I don't know how realistic his chance was at a 59 back then, but you know, in soft conditions this year,
yeah. I think he missed the putt on 17. 59 right. Was on.
Okay,
this golf course to me screams, if the guy was still playing, you would just sit and go, it's Jim Furyk golf course.
Yeah,
it's a Jim Furyk golf course.
Mm.
And interestingly enough, you know, you had the 62s that week were hit by Charlie Hoffman, who, as we know, is another one of these. If he likes a soft golf course, yeah, he likes a relatively short golf course, like a TPC River Highlands, something like that. And Webb Simpson, he was another one that shot 8 under 62 back in 2010 when Webb Simpson was still quite wet behind the ears.
Yep,
Webb Simpson. So yeah, I think it's going to be very, very soft. The weather forecast seems to have changed overnight. There's more wind in it, though. Thursday looks pretty nasty. Could be gusting up to 30 miles an hour.
Okay.
So watch that if you're playing DK. Watch that if you're playing first round leader. There might be draw bias on Thursday. The wind then calms. There's no rain on Friday. There is the threat of rain on Saturday. The gusting winds are around about 15 to 20, and it calms down on Sunday. I think there's going to be potential. Saying that, there's no thunder in any of this. It's just whether the golf course can take the amount of rain. That's the only way this is going to get delayed. Mm. It could play, in terms of the weather, similar to what we saw at Potomac a few weeks ago.
Yep.
You know, it was a couple of days where it was just raining all day, wasn't it? And the players just had to get on with it.
Yeah.
Rare on the PGA Tour, because they normally haul them off saying that there's some electricity activity around, but I don't see electricity in this forecast. So the betting market, it's crazy really. Scotty Scheffler at 9-1, fresh off a playoff defeat, which would have been his fifth victory this year. He's gone Tiger Woods-esque, hasn't he, Scheffler? Scary really.
Oh, it's prolific.
He's prolific. JT at 10, McIlroy at 11, Cameron Smith at 12, Sam Burns 16-1. He's actually been priced. He's actually moved on 10bet as we're recording. He's down to 16-1, but still best price with 10bet. Then we've got Shane Lowry at 18s, Matt Fitzpatrick at 20s, Corey Connors at 22s. I expect loads of people will be on Tony T2Fee now at 28-1. Then the likes of Hatton at 33s, Harold Varner the third, if you want to take that pill again. Oh, I had such a close look at Harold Varner, but I just couldn't do it. And hometown hero, although I don't think he's from this part of Canada, Adam Hadwin at 40-1.
Yeah.
We're then out to 50-1 for Patrick Reed, Sebastian Munoz, Chris Kirk. And yes, that is the trouble with this field. It's great at the top, and it thins down so, so quickly. And overnight, they're letting the likes of John Merrick, George McNeil, he's been added to the field. I mean, down at the bottom here, it's absolute. Mike Weir's playing.
Yeah, more to come as well.
Ben Crane. Oh, mate, it's getting worse, yeah.
They might have to dig into the reserve list if you get a spate of withdrawals this afternoon.
Yes. Do you know who I think might be inbound?
Go on.
Your friend.
What, Omar?
Omar Uesti, mate. I think Omar's inbound. Now, correlating courses. I mean, it's not a bad place to start. If we look at where Carl Pettersson won, that's not a bad spot, is it?
No.
Carl Pettersson, you won't be surprised by any of this. He has won at Sedgefield, where they play the Wyndham. He has won at Copperhead, another Carolina golf course, although it's in Florida, Carolina style. He has won at Harbortown. Are you seeing a pattern here? He's also a winner at Muirfield Village. Now, that was when Muirfield Village was quite, it was relatively short back then.
Yeah.
It was a lot shorter than it is now. So Muirfield Village, tree lined. Sedgefield, Carolina golf course. Harbortown, Carolina golf course. Copperhead, Carolina type golf course played in Florida. There's also some, I don't know what we got. He was also very good at the Sony Open. Yeah, that all makes sense. He was very good. He had a top two finish at Torrey Pines. I thought that was interesting. So, yeah. St. Jude as well, another par 70. Third and an eighth. Boston as well, TPC Boston up in Massachusetts, a fourth and a ninth up there. So those are kind of correlating courses I was looking through. Do you know what? There was such little quality at prices that I liked. I've just gone kind of minimum risk. Yeah. If I could get someone in the mix Sunday, I'd be more than happy.
The mid-range wasn't overly attractive this week.
No, when I'm looking at David Lipsky at 80-1, I think Lipsky could go well here because you've always said to me, shorter tree line courses, Lipsky is a danger.
He is, yeah. I prefer him on
really
Bermuda.
Do you really see David Lipsky winning? See, I don't.
No, I do prefer him on Bermuda rather than Bent, but that's based on his old European Tour, DP World Tour stats and performances back in the day. But yes, tree lines and tracks, that tend to be his forte. Shorter ones as well.
I also had a look at the leaderboard from 2019. Now, they played, that was the first time that they played the RBC Canadian Open the week before the US Open.
Yeah.
So it's in this particular time slot. And it was a similar kind of field with some good names at the top and then a real lack of depth. And we had McIlroy winning, Shane Lowry and Webb Simpson in second place, tied. Kuchar, Snedeker, Hadwin, Sungjae Im, all in the top seven. So some good players there. Even Colin Morikawa played. He was 14th. So you had big names there, Dustin Johnson in the top 20. Most of the big names at the top of the leaderboard were near the top of the, in the betting rather, were near the top of the leaderboard. So that's just sucked me in. So I am going for, I managed to get Cam Smith at 14-1, which was backable for me. I just think on a golf course, this was another thing I took from Carl Pettersson's win. Mm. Carl Pettersson, when he won here, ranked second on the PGA Tour for par four scoring, and he was the number one player for strokes gained putting the whole season.
Yep.
Short game. These greens, apparently, are both very small but very, very contoured. Now, whether they still have that severe contouring post the renovation in 2014, I'm not 100%. or whether they basically just changed the green surface and took the power out, put relay bent, but kept the whole contouring. I think they made the greens potentially slightly bigger. But anyway, I think to me, there was a lot of good putters at the top of the leaderboard and good scramblers.
Mm.
Charlie Wee was up there. Matt Kuchar was up there. Greg Chalmers, these kind of players. And that just took me to Cameron Smith, who I got 14-1. If you just look at what he's done so far this season, 8th for strokes gained putting. 1st for birdie average, 1st for scoring average, 2nd for par 4 scoring average and 1st for par 5 scoring average. So give him a mix of quite stringent par 4s and par 5s that are up for grabs. I think Smith is a massive danger this week.
Yeah, yeah. And we talked about his ball striking at the PGA Championship as well, which was incredible from tee to green.
It went completely the other way last week. Mm. He had no ball striking. It was all short game.
Yeah.
But then that was on a golf course where he'd miscut, 64th, 68th before he'd gone there. And this year he was actually contending for the victory.
Mm.
So it just shows you how the guy's game has changed.
Yep.
How the mentality has changed. I genuinely think that this shorter course with the tiny greens and where the contours on the greens really come alive for good putters, I think it's really... Smith's the one that I took at the top.
Mm.
Although you could, stating the obvious, you could build a case for any of them, couldn't you?
Yeah, you could, yeah. And, you know, Rory McIlroy...
They're all in good nick.
Yeah, McIlroy on a soft course. Potentially, you know, you and I are talking off mic about his record when defending, even though it's, you know, 3 years down the line now, isn't it, since he won.
He's never defended a title
in
his professional career.
Is that even a consideration for him? Is it a mental block or is it just a quirk of his statistics so far? Not entirely sure, but at the price, it's a tough one to justify, really.
Don't forget, Cam Smith, winner at Wylie Country Club, first at TPC Sawgrass. I'm just looking at Carl Peterson, actually. Peterson had a couple of top tens at Sawgrass.
Mm.
4th at Riviera, 3rd at Ridgewood, 3rd at TPC Boston. So again, tree line golf courses, not classical, not a problem. He's also got top 10s at Harbortown, tick, TPC Southwind, tick, Sedgefield, tick. And that was before Cameron Smith was the player he is right now.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm on Cam Smith. And the other one I couldn't resist, and a player that I'd love to know if Barry's backing him this week because his price is so poor to what we're used to seeing. But if there's a golf course that should suit Shane Lowry, it's this one. So I took 2.5 points each way at 20-1. He's an 18-1 chance now.
Yeah. I think it's more a case of when, not if, he wins again soon and... Eventually, it'll all click, won't it? One week, it'll all just work and bang. Could be this week.
He's ranking at the moment 14th for strokes gained putting and 2nd for proximity to hole on approaches.
Mm.
And across all those target distances, high-end distances, Shane's all just all over them.
Yeah.
2nd last time out in 2019 when I was on board that year. I think I was on board at 40-1. He finished 2nd behind the marauding Rory McIlroy that particular Sunday.
Mm.
So, yeah, Lowry and Smith, I've just kept it simple. I've also added a 45-1 shot. I know that you've got a player who I had a very close look at as well, but you've told me off mic.
Yeah.
So take the listeners through that particular chance.
Yeah, the one I've backed in that kind of range is Juan Sebastian Munoz at 50-1. And I guess what made me think was when I read your preview and your notes and looking at Peterson shooting 60 and a couple of 62s, as you described, someone who can go low. And Sebastian Munoz recently shot 60 at the Byron Nelson, finished 3rd overall. First round, he shot 60. And I think someone who's got that scoring capability, I don't think you necessarily need it every day this week, and certainly if there's going to be some wind around. But on the days where it is calmer, the days that it is more scoreable and softer, someone who's got that ability to put in a really low round at some point during the tournament could get himself right in the mix. And yeah, Sebastian Munoz is that kind of player, and I thought 50 to 1 in that mid range, there wasn't much else there that was screaming at me.
I think you've hit a nail on the head, Paul. I really do, because Carl Pedersen was 68th going into the weekend. Yep. He basically made the cut on the number. Saturday morning, goes out early, shoots 60, vaults all the way up to second for Sunday.
Yep. There you go.
Now, with this weather forecast, you could see something kind of similar, because who knows where it comes. That number might come on the Friday when the golf course is soft and calm. It could even come from off the pace on Sunday, which looks the calmest of the lot. Soft golf course. Someone could just fire in a crazy low round, and a Munoz, a Cam Smith is that kind of player, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, someone who's streaky enough to post that really low total at some point. And he's got a couple of decent spins in Canada, 32nd and 11th on different courses, of course. But last time, 2019, he opened with 65 and closed with a 64. So there's some scoring ability in Canada in his record. And yeah, it just seems the sort to me. Seems the sort who could do that.
Here you go. Lowest scores this season on the PGA Tour. Oh, this is crazy. Sebastian Munoz. He's hit 60 twice this season.
Yep.
Once at the RSM Classic end of last year, and at the Byron Nelson a few weeks ago. The only other player with a 60 was Tyler McCumber. That's mad.
Mm. Yeah.
And then there's a raft of players who have shot 61s this year, which includes Justin Thomas. Interesting.
Yeah, it's just one day. Can you produce that one mad low round and, do it, do a Pedersen and get yourself in the mixer?
So you're on Munoz. What price did you get on him?
50s I took on Munoz. The only other one I backed very early was Matt Wallace at 400 to 1. Now, that price was ludicrous. And
how much?
400s he was early on with 10-bet. It was also...
Lord.
I saw a few people saying that he'd opened at the same price with DK Sportsbook over in the States as well. I couldn't resist him at 400 to 1. I backed him recently in the DP World Tour.
That's ridiculous.
Fifth at the Dutch Open.
I was contemplating him at 100s.
He finished fifth at the Dutch Open. He was 18th last week, and that was without his clubs, because he turned up, no clubs, no equipment, no nothing, and they had to fly him some emergency clubs out. And he still managed to get himself into the top 20 in the end, ranked third for strokes gained approach on these emergency clubs. Mm-hmm. And flying out to Canada, hopefully with all of his gear intact this time. The price differential on Matt Wallace was mad. Some bookies were open at 80 to 1, as you said, in that kind of 100 to 50 to 1 generally. And then you got this price that's just screaming at you at 400 to 1. So.
Well, William Hill was 66s. So you were seeing William Hill at 66s and you managed to back him with 10-bet at 400 to 1.
400, yeah.
I mean, you've just sold 10-bet to every listener on the podcast. They are currently 10-bet 200 to 1 on Matt Wallace. The next longest is Unibet at 150s, and like William Hill are 66s, and most are at 80s.
Yeah,
madness.
Yeah. It is true disparity on that line.
I had a good look at Wallace. I had a look at JT Poston. I wouldn't be surprised if Poston's the sort, because we know that he's won at Sedgefield. He's also very good at Harbortown. In the end, I went for Keith Mitchell, who didn't get into through qualifying, which is probably a good thing, which means he'll play this week. But I managed to get Keith Mitchell at 45 to 1 with William Hill. You just look at Mitchell and you look at how he plays. He can shoot extremely low scores. I'm seeing a 62 here from the CJ Cup at the start of the season. The other thing is, I always remember Keith Mitchell, very good at places like Sony Open, Wireye. His main weapon of choice is he's a fantastic driver of the golf ball, and which he's doing at the moment. He's managed to rein the driver in to make it both long and straight. And from that, his game tends to flow. Just look at his statistics. He is very, very strong with the clubs 200 yards and out. And also, just looking at where he does his scoring, very, very strong on long par threes and those long par fours.
Yeah.
Mitchell, within the top five on tour for par five birdies or better as well. So give me a player that can take those par fives apart and can handle those longer threes and fours. I'm very interested. So, yeah, I took Keith Mitchell. World number 73.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Well, big week this week, and then he could be right on the edge of getting into the world's top 50. This is the thing. You know, it's an opportunity for some of these lower players in the pecking order. But I think you're going to have to beat someone very, very elite or a number of elite players to get the job done this week.
Yeah.
I think the bigger names are going to gravitate back to the top just with the US Open next week.
Yeah. Well, it goes one of two ways, doesn't it? They're either just fine-tuning and preparing for next week, and you see them either miss the cut or just kind of meander around and for a mid-division finish to get four rounds under their belt, or one of them just walks away with the title.
Full disclosure, I had my first bet on the US Open last week. I took Tommy Fleetwood. The 66-1 with Ladbrokes, and they boosted it up for me to 75-1 for my couple of quid each way. He didn't play too badly last week. Fringy top 10, wasn't he, Fleetwood?
Yep.
If that really is, you know, as we know, US Open tough next week, where 3-4 under is going to be there right on the Sunday. I think that that is Tommy Fleetwood Towers right there.
Yeah.
If there's one major that I can see him winning, it would be a US Open or potentially a windy British Open.
Yeah, Open Championship. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, no, it's not far away, Tommy. That was kind of his traditional or recent DP World Tour style finish last week. So, you know, on the fringes of a place, but just unbackable at a really short price, either win only or even each way. It's just doesn't quite work. But yeah, he's not far away, is he, Tommy?
Seems to sort the driver out. He's just not quite as consistent as he used to be with his greens in regulation. But he's putting well and driving well. Just hope that the, you know, on a golf course where if you're hitting 70% of greens at a US Open, that's going to be top of the field. That's the kind of place where he comes to the fore.
Yep.
So, yeah, I'm on Tommy Fleetwood at 75. So that's my only anti-post bet on the US Open. Mm. Right, that's us then, Paul, I believe.
Yep. We'll be back later in the week with a US Open preview, as we've discussed a couple of times.
And, we will.
Hopefully Barry will be available. If not, it will be you and I just chewing the fat over next week's major.
I will put a link in this description box to our US Open research preview, which I wrote a few weeks ago. So if you want to start digging around, doing some trend analysis and what you're looking for at the US Open, have a read of that particular research preview. Thanks for your time, Paul. Hope your bets go well.
Yeah, best of luck this week, Steve.
Best of luck to you. Best of luck to listeners. We'll be back later this week with that US Open research podcast. See you soon.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system, the golf